the worst mass murderer in U.S. history is about to die. WIBC's John Bartholomew reports from the federal prison in Terre Haute.
As of now, strapped in a gurney, the first of three chemicals that will end Timothy McVeigh's life are now being injected into his veins.
June 11th, 2001.
First, sodium pentothal to cause a deep sleep. Second, a chemical to cause paralysis of the muscles and lungs. And finally, potassium chloride will stop his heart.
The six-year journey that Timothy McVeigh began in front of the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City ended in Terre Haute, Indiana, with his departure from this planet at the hands of the federal government.
You now, live from the podium, what will take place
here? I'm Harley
here.
Lappin, the warden here at the United States Penitentiary, Terre Haute. The court order to execute inmate Timothy James McVeigh has been fulfilled. Timothy James McVeigh has been executed by lethal injection. He was pronounced dead at 7:14 a.m.
McVeigh was the first person to be executed by the federal government since 1963. His crime, along with partner Terry Nichols, was building a bomb that he put inside of a rented Ryder truck. He parked it in front of the federal building and detonated it on the morning of April 19, 1995. The bomb went off at 9:02. The blast killed 168 people, hurt over 300 more, and damaged or destroyed buildings for 16 city blocks.
There are four elements that I have to receive information regarding.
What you're hearing is tape from a meeting being conducted by an attorney in a building across the street. It was the deadliest act of terrorism inside the United States prior to the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York.
The ceiling fell in on my head, and it took me a second. It's like I was almost unconscious for a second to figure out what had happened. And the whole building just felt like it was caving in. I didn't know what was going on. When everything kind of calmed, after all the building had fallen, we made it to the window on the south side and looked across the street, and the federal building was just blown all to shreds.
The floors literally pancaked one on top of another, and rescue crews say they can hear survivors inside. They are trying to calm their fears until the rescue crews can actually get to them.
Some of the people killed in the bombing were children attending daycare inside the building.
We've been able to get a lot of people that are injured, that are alive, out to hospitals receiving treatment. And we're in a systematic process right now of going through that building and getting to the survivors. We're talking to some people that are trapped in that. And at this point, it's just a very slow, painstaking thing. It's very frustrating for firefighters because there are some areas where we're reaching and touching people, but we just can't get to them.
Timothy McVeigh was caught about an hour after the bombing by a trooper with the Oklahoma Highway Patrol. In the 2 years that followed the bombing, before the trials of McVeigh and Nichols, the feds conducted more than 28,000 interviews. McVeigh's reasoning, described by one of his attorneys, Stephen Jones, interviewed in his hometown by WIBC's John Herrick, when Herrick was a news anchor in Enid, Oklahoma.
The federal government and the law enforcement agencies learned from the Oklahoma City bombing, and they did not repeat what I consider to be their serious mistakes at Ruby Ridge, which was the assault on Randy Weaver's house and family, and what happened at Mount Carmel with the Branch Davidians. And then when the Oklahoma City bombing occurred, because a motivation for it was what happened at Ruby Ridge and what happened with the Branch Davidians, I think they changed the approach toward dissident domestic groups.
In the investigation leading up to the 1997 trial in federal court in Colorado, it was discovered that Nichols and McVeigh, along with co-conspirator Michael Fortier, had been associates since Army basic training in 1988. They had been angry at the federal government since Ruby Ridge and the siege in Idaho.
On August 22, 1992, completely without warning of any kind, an FBI sniper shot and killed my wife, Vicky.
From a Senate hearing.
He was using a 308 caliber sniper rifle with a specially weighted barrel and a 10 power scope. He was using match grade ammunition. He had years of training to kill.
That anger grew with the siege at Waco and the Branch Davidians, in which men, women, and children were killed by fire and bullets by federal agents.
I must tell you, this is a horrible sight from 2 miles away.
The plot was originally a series of assassinations as revenge.
This is really a horrible
One
sight.
Of the targets was U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno. But McVeigh decided that his message would be better heard if he took down a federal building, making sure that agencies like the ATF, the DEA, and FBI were affected. The building in OKC fit the bill. The 9-story building had been the target of a plot that was not carried out in 1983, very similar to the one that McVeigh did carry out. The man responsible, Richard Snell, was coincidentally executed the same day as the Oklahoma City bombing for several murders. McVeigh and Nichols stole or procured the materials to build the bomb, which included ammonium nitrate, commonly used as fertilizer.
So I think emotionally, I was prepared, and professionally, I recognized I had a duty.
Stephen Jones, one of McVeigh's attorneys.
Most of the time when people would ask me, why did you do it or how could you do it, I was responding professionally in that I said, well, I have a duty, I don't have a conflict of interest, and lawyers are supposed to accept court appointments unless they have a conflict of interest, no matter the impact on themselves personally. And so I felt I had a duty. I knew the judges, and I knew it was important to them to have an Oklahoma trial lawyer.
The trial in Colorado after 2 years of preparation and gathering mounds of evidence.
One night during the lead up to the trial, one of the lawyers asked me how we would know if we had succeeded. And I said, well, it depends on what your definition of success is. But if we succeed as professionals, we can go home again.
Jones is known for being a lawyer that carries out his duty, regardless of judgment or personal feeling.
I don't concern myself in the abstract with whether he or she did it. That's the jury's job. And the jury will decide, and it's not my place to substitute my judgment for theirs.
The jury has spoken, and their verdict is entitled to respect, and all Americans should accord it that respect until such time, if ever, it is overturned by a court of competent jurisdiction.
Though they acted as partners, McVeigh was sentenced to death as the person who detonated the bomb. Nichols was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
We ask that the barriers and intolerance which have divided us may crumble, that suspicions disappear, and that hatreds cease.
This is not a day of great joy for the prosecution team. We're pleased that the system worked and that justice prevailed. But the verdict doesn't diminish the great sadness that occurred in Oklahoma City 2 years ago. Our only hope is that the verdict will go some way to preventing such a terrible, drastic crime from ever occurring again. Thank you.
Maybe one of the benefits of me talking to you today is that you'll see that maybe not everything is true that you've heard about me.
In 2000, 1 year before his execution at Terre Haute, McVeigh agreed to an interview with Ed Bradley of CBS News.
Well, am I pure evil? Am I the face of terror sitting here in front of you? Or am I able to talk to you man to man?
Most people in this country think you are the face of evil, don't they?
They do. But sitting down here now, and let me make clear, I'm not sitting here trying to influence you, and I'm not putting on a game face. I'm not conning anybody. I'm just being me.
6:45 at WIBC Studios on the Circle. This is Jeff Pigeon along with Greg Garrison in our studio this morning. And Steve Simpson, of course, in Terre Haute as we continue our coverage on the execution of Tim McVeigh. Steve?
The execution on June 11th, 2001 was covered by media from all over the country, including WIBC.
Thanks, Pidge. With witnesses from victims to family members of victims to government officials and media looking on, Timothy James McVeigh will be given a three-chemical intravenous that will end his life in about 15 minutes from right now. He'll be given a minute prior to that to say his final words. His attorney, one of his attorneys, is Robert Nye. He was asked about that here in Terre Haute yesterday.
He will have final words. His mind over the last weekend has been to prepare for his execution tomorrow. He had prepared previously. He had indicated previously, and he's never changed his thinking on this, that he prefers to be executed than to spend lengthy life in prison without the possibility of release. And he still feels that way.
And the thing that always gets me is when everybody gets all wound up and they're all excited and upset because this guy's going to die, he's going to fall asleep. Not get his body ripped one limb from the other one by falling concrete.
And they're going to be, who knows how many people are going to be there in Oklahoma City watching this on the closed circuit. Perhaps, quote-unquote, closure to them, although I know they don't particularly, a lot of them don't particularly care for that word, but perhaps the healing process for them
can begin.
There might be something for them. Obviously, there is something for them. That's why they want to be there.
7:21 here at WIBC, and more from Terre Haute this morning, obviously, right now. Stan Lear in our news center this morning. Stan?
The next word from the death house in Terre Haute is expected at the bottom of the hour. Pidge, we'll go live again to the federal prison.
He was pronounced dead at 7:14 a.m. Central Daylight Time. McVeigh's body will be released to a representative of his family. Inmate McVeigh was calm throughout the entire process. He cooperated entirely during the time he was restrained in the execution holding cell. To the time he walked into the execution room, he stepped up onto a small step and sat down on the table. He then positioned himself for us to apply the restraints. Inmate McVeigh did not make a final statement. I have provided to the press a written statement he provided to me, and I've asked them to share that with you.
Good morning. I'm Byron Pitts from CBS News. Timothy James McVeigh died with his eyes open. When the curtains came back, he made eye contact with his people who came to support him. But Mr. McVeigh did make a write out a written statement that the warden passed out to each of us. I'll read it to you now. It reads, and this is written by Timothy McVeigh by hand. Final written statement of Timothy McVeigh. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeoning of chance, my head is bloodied, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. And matters how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
I'm Nolan Clay, and it's with the Daily Oklahoman. I just have a few more details. The poem was the Invictus poem, that British a poem that was written in the 1800s. I had a copy of it off the internet. I compared it to the written statement that was given to us.
I'm Karen Grunden from the Terre Haute Tribune Star. As the time got closer, again, we had the testing 1, 2, 3 from the warden, and a correctional officer explained to us that they were checking the feed from Oklahoma City. The white sheet was up to his chest, and he was also laying on a white sheet. There was a white sheet draped on the gurney. The warden and U.S. Marshal Frank Anderson both had earpieces in. They were standing next to each other. The warden did say, "Inmate McVeigh, you may make your last statement." At that point, there was silence. At that point, the warden read the sentencing information, and then the red phone was picked up after the warden said, "Marshal, we are ready. May we proceed?" The marshal responded, Warden, you may proceed with the execution. And as others described, he looked around. He did swallow and puff some air, and you could see his chest moving up and down. The warden did look at Timothy McVeigh. His eyes blinked a few times, and then they remained open.
It's 7:51 here at WIBC as we continue our coverage live from Terre Haute. Timothy McVeigh pronounced dead at 7:14 Indianapolis time here June 11th, the year 2001, an intravenous given in his right leg.
The end of the story after 6 years was an end only to Timothy McVeigh's life and potential for evil. His partner, Terry Nichols, is serving 161 life sentences on state murder convictions. Michael Fortier has finished his sentence lighter because he and his wife both testified against Nichols and McVeigh.
What happened here on April 19th will never be forgotten, nor will we forsake or abandon anyone affected by the events of that day.
The legacy of the bombing is those large concrete barriers at federal buildings across the United States. The memory that informs caution that some people are willing to sacrifice their fellow Americans to get their message across. And a memorial where the Murrah Federal Building once stood 9 stories tall. Special thanks to John Herrick. I'm Chris Davis reporting.